Are you driven to innovate and lead transformation in your organization? Our Digital Innovation Program provides you with the tools to navigate complexity and chaos and successfully deliver digital change. Visit imi.ie for more information. IMI, we grow leaders.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the IMI Talking Leadership podcast. Today, I have Alan Lyons with me. Alan is a business psychologist who works internationally as a leadership coach, trainer, and keynote speaker. He's also a partner at Kinch Lyons, where psychology means business. And Alan is a faculty member here at the IMI, and he was recently on a panel discussion for our senior leaders breakfast briefing, where we spoke about sustainable high performance. So I really wanted to get Alan on the podcast to go into a bit more depth about health and how it can impact performance. So Alan, please go ahead and introduce yourself to our listeners and tell us a bit about your background.
Thanks, Farah, and thanks for having me on your podcast. Yeah, so I am a chartered psychologist. I actually started as a counseling psychologist. That became a bit tricky to do all day. So I moved in to the organizational business space, which is very similar. You know, in fact, even coming from family therapy, if you're looking at the kind of behavioral science within families, we then apply it within teams. So as business psychologists, we're very much into the analytics, the science behind it. And we use something called positive psychology. And I often explain that at the beginning, because most people think positive psychology is just what they call pop psychology. Now, pop psychology is, you know, if you're not feeling great, somebody just says to you, think positively. That's not the most helpful bit of information. And that's not what positive psychology is. Positive psychology is, I'll just explain it to you briefly, it's really around the science of well-being and optimal functioning. So up until the early 80s, all psychology was really based on, you know, the negative emotions in our lives, et cetera. And a big shift in psychology came in the 80s when they said, you know what, we've never looked at measuring the opposite, you know, resilience and well-being, high performance, sustainable high performance. So it's the science behind that, which is positive psychology. We actually have the first positive psychology health wing in Ireland, first in Europe, opened in the Royal College of Surgeons. So if you're interested in this space, they open source a lot of their materials. They've actually gone with the name Positive Health Sciences. Get away from that pop psychology bit. There's a lot more information there, open to everyone if you're interested as well.
Over the past 4 years, I guess exactly 4 years ago, we started to see different perspectives with regards to hybrid working. And there are people now who have been longing to go back to the office as the lockdowns ended, people who swear they'll never brave the commute ever again, and everything in between. So how can organizations and leaders successfully navigate the friction between people who prefer those office-centric environments and the people who advocate more for remote work?
Yeah, I mean, you're nailing it there, Farah. Like the friction, or as we say, the tension between them is really, really ramping up, and people are very polarized in their view of it. And you know, quite simply, that's because there's so many different ways you can go about it. And then people have a preference, like you alluded to, and then they only see the research and data which reinforces their viewpoint. But actually, a lot of the research and data on it is just complete noise. It might be making bold statements based on 10 people. And when you're working with companies and you ask them, are you doing hybrid? Are you experimenting with hybrid? They'll go, oh, yes. And then when you inquire, well, what are you doing to experiment? You find they're actually doing nothing. They're just waiting to see what happens. And that's a nightmare, because if you do that, then the impact of that could be negative. It looks like it's not working. And then you do a big, you know, the senior leaders maybe mandate everybody back in, and you lose the whole opportunity of what could have been, you know, benefited from, because we've known for a long time that hybrid work is the future. And in fact, you know, it is a generational change. So you can try and stop it now, but actually you're just going to really not benefit from it. And it's going to come along anyway. It's a bit like back in the 80s, early 90s, control and command. Then we had the knowledge age workers. Knowledge age workers wanted more of a voice. The control and command leader said, good luck with that. But now, obviously, the majority of people are knowledge age workers. And the same thing, the generational change in hybrid. However, only it will be useful if it's organized hybrid. So I mean, if you're intentional and you're experimenting with it. I said there's a lot of bad data, but there's also a lot of great data. And I'll signpost you towards that now. It's Nicholas Bloom, a professor in Stanford. He's been looking at data from working from home since 2004. He literally surveys 10,000 employees a month from 5,000 different companies. And what they found is, if we break it down, there's fully in the office, there's organized hybrid, notice the word organized, and then there's fully remote. And when we look at productivity, what we notice is people who are fully remote are slightly less productive. And that's true. Now, there's payoffs to that because they're working remote. You don't maybe have other expenses incurred with them. But then when it comes to productivity and fully in the office and hybrid, all the research shows that people who are fully in the office are very productive, but equally as productive are the organized hybrid. However, there is a variance when we look at happiness, which is huge. Happiness is not as high if you're fully in the office over organized hybrid. Organized hybrid are the happiest employee. And, you know, it doesn't take a rocket scientist or a psychologist to point out where that goes with the productivity levels increasing if your employees also have a stronger sense of well-being and happiness.
I think what was seen as pretty ironic recently was that Zoom announced their preference for employees returning to the office. And they're the company that largely enabled us to work remotely and to work in a hybrid situation during the lockdowns. So how do you see situations like that impacting the future of hybrid work arrangements?
Well, that very much feeds into when I also said there was bad data out there. There's also a lot of fake news out there to go with our American friends. And what I mean by that is they never wanted a return to the office. What they actually soon did is they looked at it and they said, we're going to really enforce our hybrid policy. And the hybrid policy, it was something like 3 days a week. And in fact, if you lived outside of 30 kilometers from the office, it didn't apply to you. So all they were doing was they were experimenting, using growth mindset, iteration, seeing how hybrid's working, and then realizing that, okay, the best thing that we've noticed is to enforce this hybrid policy. But that was jumped upon, obviously, by leaders who just want people back in the office, you know, rather than actually looking at it and actually seeing what it, and that's what I mean. People are just polarized. They're just seeing what they want to see. But if it's organized hybrid, you know, that Zoom are using an organized hybrid, they're not actually changing anything. They're just enforcing a hybrid policy. But also remember, Barrett, if you're going to come in, it's a bigger point though, return to the office. If I'm going to come back into the office, make it worth my while. And that's the leadership bit. There's no point having me coming back into the office when I have all the benefits of not being in there and all I'm doing is sitting on Zoom or our meetings. That's going to kill engagement, obviously, you know. So that's not organized hybrid. That's just chaos. So making sure touch points where the social networks can be created and advanced. So if I'm coming in, I'm coming in for a reason. I'm coming in to collaborate. I'm coming in to connect. It's really as looking at the office as a new offsite. And as a leader, rather than once you mandate, you know, you're in trouble. You know, the behavioral science around this, if you're too tight, you're in trouble. You'll kill engagement. You know, so you want to create FOMO. You want people to want to come in. Now, the other extreme of the behavioral science of that, you can be too loose and just see what happens. And again, that creates frustration. And then people end up mandating because they think it's not working because they're not really experimenting with it. They're just leaving it too loose. They're not too tight, not too loose. And experimentation, and that's where we're at.
I think that's so interesting to hear you say that leaders have to want people to want to come in, because that's where you'll really get those high levels of engagement, those high levels of productivity, not just people sitting at a desk and going on Zoom calls just the same as they would at home. And I guess the shift towards hybrid work has been described as a bit of a generational change in the workforce. How do you think that it's impacting the traditional notions of work-life balance as we know it?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot. We've known for a long time that there was a better way to work, that hybrid was a better way to work. And, you know, CEOs would sit through the presentations, but not really trust that people would, you know, perform as well at home. But that's not been changed now. The experiment is, you know, the COVID has allowed us to experiment a lot quicker, maybe, but something that was naturally going to happen anyway. And all the metrics on people being, the well-being and being happier is it's there. Actually, you have Linda Grattan, I know, coming over to the IMI, I think in November. She is from the London School of Economics and has been preaching about this stuff for a long time, about the way we're working isn't working. In fact, we're killing people. And this is an opportunity now, but only if it's done in an organized way. Now, when you mentioned the well-being is really interesting because, I mean, another great thing about the pandemic, if we can, take useful parts of it, is that it very much put well-being on the map. Before, even if you go back to the banking crisis, if you weren't feeling great, you were kind of given an EAP card, employee assistance program, to go off and see somebody. Now that's helpful, obviously, but it was also as if there's something wrong with you, rather than recognizing that we're all having a normal reaction to an abnormal situation. So it's great that actually leaders are coming in and discussing well-being. It's not something that you have to be shameful of. We're discussing mental health. So it's really matured, which is great. However, I suppose on the flip side of that, and this is work coming out of Goldsmith in the UK, a lot of the well-being initiatives simply don't work. There's a craze in them, like the bowl of fruit, or consider this: I'm overwhelmed, I'm nearly burnt out, but I'm offered a yoga class and some fruit, freshly squeezed fruit juices. Not only is that not helpful, but you could send me into a further spiral. What's more helpful for my well-being would be, okay, let's make sure that the meetings aren't always back to back, for instance. Like I'm being swamped by meetings. People have just copied and pasted office life to be online. And you'll actually see, because Microsoft have all the data on us now, people who are in back-to-back meetings all the time in Teams, they score the lowest on engagement surveys. And we have that data now. So what's more helpful with my well-being is train managers how to manage hybridly. They haven't been trained to manage hybridly, and it's been very frustrating because they feel like they're like mini therapists. They don't know where the healthy boundaries are. Remove the bureaucracy. Look at all the meetings that we used to have, but in the hybrid world, which ones are actually necessary? And when we meet up, make sure it's meeting up for a reason. As a leader, then, which is going to help my well-being more than anything, is to connect me around a purpose, and also help me out with tricky relationships I'm having in the hybrid fashion. That's going to help my well-being way more than anything else. But even once the leader attends to that, then the yoga class, then the nicely freshly squeezed orange juice will be very welcome for her. But that's the way to go at that.
Thanks very much, Alan. It's really interesting, and I hope everyone listening is actually considering what you're saying about how there are a lot of things that leaders need to do before they can get to the yoga classes and the free fruit in the canteen when it comes to mental health. And I want to stay on the topic of mental and physical health for a moment, because during your talk at the breakfast briefing, you mentioned that people were exhibiting PTSD symptoms when they had COVID-19, but it wasn't actually to do with having the illness. It was around the way that we'd spoken about it. Can you talk to us a little bit about that phenomenon?
And that was at the beginning of the pandemic. We didn't know what COVID was doing to people. We saw a lot, but we didn't realize if you caught it, the impact it could have on you, because nobody had really gone through it. And there was early data coming from the States showing that people who had caught COVID had also, as you said, exhibited symptoms of, acute anxiety, post-traumatic stress. And so then we had this thing, oh my God, not only does COVID make you very sick, but it can also give you a mental illness. Now, what's been discovered since is it was never actually the COVID, it was the way we were talking about it on the line, the way in the workplace and even on the radio, that your body went into the same sense of shock if you caught it based on those conversations. So it's just to show you that words, as Freud said, were originally magic. Well, they still are. You can literally transform your experience by how you communicate and of that of other people. Now, as a leader, if you will, I always say leadership is really just a bunch of talk, but it's very important talk, and not all communication is useful. We all have a negativity bias, okay? And that's well known in psychology, and that's not necessarily a bad thing. That's how we've evolved, that's how we got to where we are. However, if you want to flourish and make your team rallied around the purpose, communication with that negativity bias can greatly impact in a negative way the other people. So we have to be, if you will, dealers in hope. Napoleon Bonaparte famously said leadership is about dealing in hope. So you have to give people, rather than talking about the problems, give them a paint them a picture and rally them around a prepared future. and also their contribution within that. And if you do that, you know, people are much more likely to be resilient, they feel purposely led, etc. And, you know, I often use the example of, you know, negativity bias. That language also leads people to be in a fixed mindset. They take things so seriously, they miss things. So as a leader, you know, even watching how you're speaking, are you actually, in a way, helping people to be more fixed mindset or fearful? Are you allowing them to feel rally around the sense of hope? And we can actually look at this in organizations. There's a thing called microanalysis in communication, and you can see what happens with different communication styles. And in fact, one of the studies from Martin Seligman, who's considered the father of positive psychology, he was looking into what's called attribution theory, attribution style. So basically, pessimistic people, people who tend to be more negative, when something bad goes wrong, they generally report out differently in three ways than people who are more hopeful, which is they see it as more permanent, more severe, and, you know, more personal. Then the more optimistic, hopeful person who's, when something goes wrong, they put it down to, well, look, it's a moment in time, it won't last for that long, and it doesn't mean I'm bad at everything. But whichever mindset you're using can greatly impact you as a leader. They did a great study in the NBA. Now, I know nothing about basketball. I was just reading the study years ago. And, you know, from the quarterfinals up, most teams could beat other teams on a given day. And what they did was the psychology students looked at the transcripts that players and managers and coaches gave in interviews after the game. And they divided it up, which one was in a kind of a negativity bias to the pessimistic, and which was more optimistic and hopeful. And then these students knew nothing about basketball, but they were able to predict which teams would win ahead of the main pundits who supposedly knew a lot about basketball simply by looking at the language, which team was more negative and which more team was more hopeful. And, you know, and that actually has influenced the way athletes and coaching staff will, you know, conduct interviews now, because you can really dissect by the language what the culture within that team is. So we can actually do the same in the workplace. We can dissect the culture by the way people are speaking. Is it aligned to their values? You know, and this isn't, by the way, just all happy clappy. We're very interested in problems. We're just more interested in how we get away from them and how we create a preferred future together to not be stuck with them. Because the problem with just looking at problems all the time, and engineers find this tricky, they always look to do a root cause analysis, the why. But the problem is when emotions and hybrid as an emotional thing is involved, a root cause analysis doesn't work. You find lots of reasons, but you never get the root cause. You're much better off going, okay, if in a few months' time this is working really well, how would we all know? And allow everybody to have a voice in it. And that's what Google did in that famous study, Project Aristotle, the best teams created psychological safety. How? By having everybody having a voice. So the good companies you'll see are doing this now with hybrid. Everybody is having a voice into what's working and what we want to do differently around hybrid. And also good companies, but the companies I've seen do it well, get somebody at a senior level to be in charge of hybrid, you know, rather than actually having it at a low level. So it's just strong leadership and role modeling being done around it.
Thank you so much, Alan. I think one of the really key takeaways from what you've just said is that language matters, the way we communicate matters, and the way that we're speaking to each other, and of course the way leaders are speaking to their team members and the way they're talking about the business in general is going to really impact on the culture, whether that's in a hybrid situation or a full-time office situation or even a fully remote situation. So thank you so much for those insights.
Absolutely.
I wanted to touch on something that you also mentioned at the breakfast briefing, and that is loneliness. And I have actually heard previously from another speaker we had last year, Bruce Daisley, that having a friend at work is a key indicator of performance. So how do you think organizations can foster a sense of belonging and help people make peer connections so that they don't feel lonely, whether that is in a hybrid situation or within an office situation where people are sitting on Zoom calls all day and not really getting time to connect with others around them?
You know, the previous speaker spot on that friend. That's a Gallup survey. Have you got a friend in work? And, you know, even younger people, this is the loneliness is taken off because I suppose it got front center because the Surgeon General in the US last year said, we're actually having an epidemic of loneliness. And it was backed up by research, which was, and the sad bit, speaking about the friend in work, it was actually younger people. Don't worry about work. One in five of them said they didn't believe they had a best friend, full stop. So this is the spin-off of, you know, remote, you know, being forced to be at home. Some people may be in university, working at home, not having the proper experience. It's that we've, you know, lost the connection points. And actually, more recent research shows you're less likely to leave a company because of your boss. You're more likely to leave because of peer relationships or lack of them. So where it was very startling when the US Surgeon General, he was actually able to show research which showed that people who suffer from loneliness, it's the equivalent on your, you know, physical health as if you were smoking 15 cigarettes a day, which is huge. So you can see you get, you're more paranoid. You don't feel you can be yourself. We're often talking about the growth mindset. Will you be in a fixed mindset? You don't feel psychologically safe. So loneliness, paranoia can really feed, well, for the person's health, full stop, but you can see the impact that that's going to have on the person in the workplace. An interesting one as well in Sheffield Hallam in the UK university, doing a lot of measurement into loneliness, as we are ourselves up north. And one of the key items in when we're looking to measure loneliness, a bit like they used to measure with friends, is have you got somebody at work that you can have a laugh with during the day? I thought that was very interesting. And obviously, if you answer no to that, it's one of the indicators towards loneliness. So everything's got so serious because, I mean, even when we're online now, it's transactional. Nobody has lightened moments. And, you know, you can actually, in psychology, we notice, take things so seriously that you miss things. You know, you're triggered. Everything is so, and obviously being lonely, that's how you're feeling. So actually loosening up, using a bit of humor. As I say, Farah, it's very hard to schedule a joke on Zoom or Teams. You know, it just doesn't happen. So we're losing those touch points. So it's a bit like oxygen. We only realize they're not there when you don't have it. So that feeding into the loneliness thing is huge. The lack of human connection. And even online then, okay, when, you know, Zoom meetings, nobody, it leads to groupthink. Nobody really talks about how they're feeling online. Okay, we say we're all okay. And it also, you know, 20% of the time online, people are doing something else anyway. So in terms of attention and focus, there's no human connection being made. And the British Psychological Society has interesting research there to show, in terms of your leadership and management, people are less likely to ask their manager or tell their manager that they need help if it's online or even on the phone. But they might in person. So you can, and you know, loneliness, hybrid, if it's not organized, increases loneliness because you might arrive in just because your hybrid policy says you have to come in a certain days, but you're not arriving in where you're teaming or collaborating or connecting with other people. You know, so you can be surrounded by people. That, I know isolation is a close cousin of loneliness, but you can be surrounded by loads of people and still feel lonely unless you intentionally create those connections. And that's not been done. And that's what, you know, experimenting with hybrid should be about. How do we intentionally create those? You know, and it's not, you'll hear me talk about positive psychology a lot. It's not that we ignore problems or we don't want to be negative. But the problem is we innately are focused on problems. We're innately negative. So we're not trying to get rid of negative emotions as if we can, but you don't really have to focus on negative emotions because they focus on you. They'll come after you, but you have to intentionally create the positive ones. And that's all we're trying to do. Not get rid of the negative ones, intentionally create the positive ones. And that is a huge way to get people, you know, out of that loneliness and back into, you know, human, basic human connection, which has been lost. And at a younger level as well, Middlesex University had some good research out showing you'll often hear people who are pro hybrid or remote working saying it's really good for my well-being. Well, it is at a certain stage, but if you're aged between 21 and 29, the research is really pointing towards that's not true. People are actually feeling less well-being because they don't have the connections. They didn't, you know, so they're feeling lonely. They don't have, you know, the networks. They didn't see how things were working here before. And you'll often see then the likes of Deloitte or EY came out last year and said our younger people don't communicate effectively and they aren't very resilient. And I was looking at that, well, I can see how that's happened, but it kind of sounds like we're blaming them. Like they communicate differently. They look at mental health differently. So, you know, there's a whole, we're in a perfect transition, which is like chaos is good news. This is a good sign that things are feeling tricky because we can really make a change out of it for the positive, but only if we are intentional, only if we actually experiment and not just wait to see what happens.
Alan, thank you so much. There's so much that we can dive into and so many insights, but just to end off, in one or two sentences, can you tell us what leaders can do to really promote a positive work culture going forward?
Yeah. And look, there's the great ones who have done this is you get people, it's a bit like when people ask that question, it's like values. You'll say to an organization, do you have values? And every organization, oh, yes, yes, we do. What are they? And they go, oh, well, come on down to reception and we have a look at them together. Or we can do, you know, so nobody knows them unless you're involved in creating them. And that's fair enough, okay? So if that's true and we want to create a positive workplace culture, allow people, again, to co-create. Obviously, you have to have a hybrid policy, but then get teams together to actually co-create a preferred future, what that will look like for us. How will we make sure that we're, you know, keeping those connections going, but having everybody's voice in it, because if people feel empowered and they feel that they've contributed to the way of working, they're much more likely to follow through with it. And that's the same thing that was happening with those Google teams and the psychological safety. The best teams were the ones that came up with their own ways of working rather than ones that's well-intentioned that might come down from HR. So that's a great way you can do. Invite them into the conversation, role model it at the top. And also, you can, I mean, a parting message from me and what I'm off to do now is you can take things so seriously, but I, you know, I'm very interested in the measurement of joy and humor in the workplace, because all what we know about people being creative and where the new learning development needs are, it's about curiosity, it's about awe, it's about having a growth mindset, and joy and humor are directly connected in there. And it's great that we can even have this conversation around that, because before the pandemic, this wouldn't have happened.
Thank you so much, Alan. I really love the idea of having a bit more curiosity, having a bit more joy in work. And I think that there are a lot of practical takeaways that people should be able to go and implement after listening to the podcast today. So thank you again for being my guest on the IMI Talking Leadership podcast. And thank you to everyone for listening. You can subscribe on SoundCloud or your preferred podcast provider to ensure that you don't miss an episode. Until next time.